Many of us remember Jim Watson as the superb Mayo-trained surgeon who became a famous caring physician in western Pennsylvania, respected and loved by his patients and colleagues, both doctors and nurses. Jim Watson was the grandson, son, brother, and father of other outstanding surgeons of the Watson dynasty. His grandchildren are walking on similar paths now. The family is being honored by the endowed Watson Professorship at our medical school. Starting before World War II, Dr. James Watson helped set high standards of care at and beyond his main hospitals, Presby and St. Margaret's. Some of us know that Jim was among the first who performed an autotransfusion, as you have heard, that he was chief surgeon of an army hospital during World War II in New Guinea for 2.5 years, that he subspecialized in abdominal surgery, and that he became a professor at Pitt. Few, however, had been privileged, as I, to experience his personality and surgical skills from the view of an anesthesiologist, close up. We worked together at Presby for 12 years. His team members admired his operating and his gentlemanly demeanor. So did his patients. He retired in 1973, probably not expecting to live for another quarter of a century, which enabled him to enjoy the development of his children and grandchildren. Jim Watson's qualities were more than those of a technically fine and delicate surgeon. His judgment was based on experience and wisdom. His approach to problems instilled confidence. He was a gentleman of the old style. Jim was a member of the search committee that recruited me to Pitt in 1961 to lead the initiation and development of an academic department of anesthesiology and beyond. It was Jim's vision and that of Pitt's then Chancellor Litchfield that we all work together toward a first-class academic medical center. This vision made me decide to move from Baltimore to Pittsburgh. My wife Eva and I will always remember with gratitude how Jim and his lovely wife Marion Bash acted like our surrogate parents. Out of their well-gardened home in Roslyn Farms, where we, upon their suggestion, spent our first year here, they introduced us to the cultural life of Pittsburgh. I believe that their example confirms for current young leaders the goodness and importance of looking after newcomers. As the Watsons loved classical music, it was easy for us to reciprocate by drawing their attention also to our favorite Austrian composers, Mahler and Bruckner. Professionally, when I, as a cocky young department chairman, and my similarly spirited new associates started new programs at Pitt, which were not all of them received with open arms, I was grateful always for Jim's calming counsel. Jim and I trusted each other. As Dr. Marshall Webster, I was told, pointed out that Jim could hear better with one ear than the other. When Jim and I communicated, and in those days personally, not via email or the handy, Jim made me stand at his good hearing side. Then I knew he trusted me. Soon after Jim's retirement, I discovered that he also was a medical historian. I had the opportunity to look at his then unpublished manuscript on Civil War casualties. It was published in the first issue of the world's first journal on disaster medicine. 5 years before his retirement, Jim began turning the baton of the Watson surgical dynasty over to his son, Chuck. I remember vividly when in 1968, Jim introduced Chuck to me and others in Presby's surgical dressing room in front of the portrait of Dr. Monheim, the first anesthesiologist of Presby, who worked with Jim in New Guinea. Jim was justifiably very proud of Chuck, who after his education, Princeton, Columbia, Harvard, joined our faculty at Pitt with an increasingly leadership role as a full-time faculty member. Jim Watson, the beloved giant of clinical abdominal surgery, who was followed by Charles Watson, the beloved, as I call him, the beloved giant of medical education. Many other surgical giants, as we know, were feared, but the Watsons were loved. Both were role models for trainees at all levels, as surgeons, as caring physicians, and as men with refined personalities and impeccable integrity. Western Pennsylvania's town and gown cherished their collegiality. My enjoyment of working in the operating room and beyond with both Jim and Chuck was based on the fact that we agreed on the following analogy of an ideal surgeon-anesthesiologist relationship. Like making chamber music, no conductor needed, patient is the opus, and the best chamber music is made and the best surgical results are achieved when the team members are friends who respect each other. I was privileged to help with only a few of the hundreds of patients who were helped and saved by Jim and Chuck Watson. We thank you both in the name of all your grateful patients. Some of them we know personally. We are gathered here today to celebrate the lives of two great, good men. Jim died in very old age, Chuck at the peak of his life. When the cruel random chances of nature threatened their lives, their self-control, courage, and deportment were exemplary and dignified. Let us convey to their spirits or souls, whichever you believe in, and to their family, that we will never forget them, and that we will pass our memories about them on to our children and students. Jim and Chuck Watson, our two remarkable friends, made every day in their lives meaningful, and this makes them remain strong links in the chains of human evolution. This makes them immortal.